Hi, you're listening to the Rick Rockhill Radio Show. I'm Rick Rockhill, of course, and thanks for tuning in. We're back today, and we're following up from a hot conversation, a hot topic we had last time, and it's about pet food. And those of you who are regular listeners know that I've been in the pet industry, and specifically the pet food industry, for quite a long time, almost 24 years now. But anyhow, it's not a secret. That's my background, and professionally, that's what I do. But it's a hot topic because I know lots of people who, just like me, have pets, and people don't know the truth. And so what we're going to talk about in today's show is specifically around high-protein pet foods. It's one of those things. You go into a pet store or you go to your favorite website and you don't know what you're looking for. You just look and see what looks good, right? You look around and it's overwhelming. You see all these different brands. They're telling you about these foods that have more meat, more protein, high protein, or feed your dog like a wolf that he is inside. And you just think to yourself, yeah, that sounds like a good thing. I'm sure more protein must be better, right? So is it? Well, there's a lot of question now about that. And after all, what could be wrong with eating more meat if you think, well, my dog's a wolf, isn't he? Well, it turns out, in fact, there's plenty wrong with that. There are numerous studies that have been done and all kinds of white papers out there that are hanging around on the internet just waiting to be read, I guess. But the risks of consuming too much protein can be dangerous. Not only to our pet's health, and by the way, for us too. You can see these things come out there every so often that you should limit the amount of red meat you're eating, limit the amount of meat on days per week. Have one night a week vegetables, right, or vegetarian, or one night a week have fish, or whatever it may be to mix it up. But with your pet, it's so easy to fall into this because the pet food companies are using marketing hype. They're taking advantage of the fact that most people really don't know a lot about nutrition, and they just assume that what those brands of pet food are saying on the label must be true. But now, scientists are warning us. There are warnings every day that there are cancer risks and high rates of cancer, correlations of cancer coming from these pet foods that are excessively high protein levels. And it's more than we knew before. So that's what we're going to talk about here today. And I'd like to start actually by getting to this notion about dogs being a wolf. And it's crazy. First of all, I don't know how many of you consider yourself a descendant of the caveman or cave person. And sure, okay, I believe in evolution, absolutely. But the fact of the matter is that we are not cavemen. We don't live like cave people anymore. How we get our food, the lifestyles we have, right? We're not cave people. So I've never thought it was a good idea to try to eat like a caveman. But with your dog, the fact is they're not wolves. Today's dogs have evolved over 12,000 years. And so the domesticated dog today is very little in common with their wolf ancestors. Think about it this way. 12,000 years ago, wolves were depending on hunting. They had to go out and days might go between meals. And when they would finally hunt and get a kill, they would have to gorge themselves and eat all kinds of parts of the animal because they didn't know the next meal was going to be. As a result, they would overeat, and then their body would have to do all this to kind of, you know, prepare for the next time they were going to eat. And it would be this starving, this fasting, and then eating heavily, and their activity levels were different. They had to hunt. So how wolves lived was different than dogs today. Our dogs are not hunting and trying to scavenge for their meals. They're put food down on the floor for them, and we give them that food. So that's very important to component. They also don't go days between eating. So as a result of all this, over thousands of years, our dogs have evolved. And in fact, there are 36 parts of the genome, that's the DNA, that are different between dogs and wolves. And 10 parts of those DNA regions are so different, they actually affect how dogs digest, their whole metabolism and everything. Yes, it's a very similar system, but the DNA has changed, so to speak, over that 12,000 years. And part of that means that because of the way dogs eat, the way the dogs live, that dogs are able to digest carbohydrates and fat, which provide energy, okay? And that's a really big difference than how wolves had to eat 12,000 years ago. So it is not what you think, that your dog is not a wolf. So just get that out of your head to begin with. And therefore, the notion that your dog should eat like a wolf is complete marketing lies, okay? But just get that out right now. So I think that, okay, so thanks, Rick, for clarifying that. Now, what's all this? How could pet food companies get away with this? How could they be allowed to say it if that's not true? Well, here's the thing. The way the pet food marketing works is there are guidelines on things. You can't say things that are not, they're completely false claims, or I can't make medical claims. But there are not limitations currently on how much protein. There are limits on how little, what the minimum can be, but there's not a maximum set. And someday that will change. And there are those of us who are lobbying that body to have that implemented, that change. But the reality is companies take advantage because they assume that marketing will apply and consumers will say, yep, that makes sense. So why? How could this be? Well, the Association of American Feed Control Officers, that's a body that's a non-governmental body, but they are the organization that defines what's right for nutrition levels for dogs and cats and other companion animals, okay? Adult dogs need to have a minimum of 18% protein, crude protein. For puppies and nursing mothers, it's about 23% protein. For most dogs with a normal lifestyle, you should be feeding them a food that is between 18 and maybe as much as 30% protein. But when you get over 30% protein, it is dangerous, and I'll tell you why in a few minutes. For cats, by the way, cats have different needs. Cats are obligate carnivores. A dog is an omnivore, meaning they eat lots of things. Cats specifically are common carnivores, but their protein levels should not be over 35%. So it's higher than dog, but when you see any pet food that's pushing 35, 40% protein, that is very dangerous and it's wrong. So just know that that's a key thing you should be aware of off the top of the bat. So let's talk about this notion about high protein or high meat content. It's basically trying to suggest to you that more is better. But the fact is, a dog can only utilize a very specific level of protein that can be digested and absorbed by the body. Okay. Now, I'm speaking to you from science. I'm not speaking to you from a marketing. And yes, I am part of a pet food company, but I'm not speaking something that's marketing speak. I'm telling you fact. So this is just published science out there. So the body utilizes what's eaten to provide energy, to build and repair muscle tissue, all the vital organ functions, to run the brain, that kind of thing. So it doesn't seem logical, I know, but basically once your dog eats food, once their body meets the requirements they need for all that, anything that's excess is literally just disposed of. And that means the body says, okay, I don't need this, so I'm going to get rid of it. And what happens is it's a chemical reaction that happens in the body. The body works just like with us to break down those components that it doesn't need. And along the way, guess what happens? The organs need to work overtime to do all that work because it's all this excess. So the kidneys have to work really hard and all that, right, to get all this stuff to break down the protein and excrete it into small components that go out through the urine. So that in of itself is tough because you're basically telling the body, or the body's saying, okay, I got to go do this process. And like, oh, okay, I couldn't absorb all the nutrients. I just need to get rid of this excess. So where does the cancer come in? Well, essentially, without getting too technical here, think of it this way. Protein gets broken down and has all these amino acids and things that the body needs. When those amino acid needs are met, those things go through the digestive system and they go into eventually past the stomach, to the large intestine, small intestine, and so forth. When they get to that large bowel, what happens is all the bacteria that's in that area of the digestive tract ferments, and the amino acids have to break down. Well, what happens with all that excess, because it was not absorbed by the body, that essentially it converts into ammonia and all kinds of toxins. Ammonia is really, really dangerous stuff. Indoles, phenols, and all kinds of sulfur-containing compounds and amines. These are five categories of nitrogenous compounds, very, very carcinogenic. That ammonia is nasty stuff. It's not something you want to have floating around in your gut. And unless there was some process that kind of whisked it all out, which of course there isn't because the body's doing its normal process, this is what can lead to cancer, okay? This is the toxic components. These compounds that are the offshoot of having too much protein, that's where it can start developing cancer symptoms. All because we've been feeding our dogs excessively high protein levels for long periods of time. By the way, I'm not talking about the occasional time that your dog might get some extra protein or something like that. And although I'm not an advocate for feeding table food, we've all done it once in a while to your dog. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about long-term effects of feeding your dog a bowl of kibble or those crazy raw food diets, which are hugely dangerous, by the way, or any kind of homemade diet you might make. If that protein level is over 30% for dog, you're asking for trouble. On that note, I'm going to pause for a minute. We're going to have a word from the Diabetes Organization, and we'll be right back.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org, but you're probably not going to. Nope, I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work, I get it, you're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Champ, reminding you that when you adopt a shelter pet, you discover all the things that make them unique. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
And we're back. This is Rick Rockhill. We're listening to the Rick Rockhill Radio Show, and we're talking about high-protein pet food diets and causing cancer in dogs. And this is something that I've had people write into me about. Oh, gosh, every week I get something from somebody asking about my recommendation on a food or what they think that I should be feeding, recommending to feed, and so forth. And what I always tell people is feed the best you can afford. Feed a commercially prepared kibble food. If you want to use wet food as well, use a commercially prepared canned food diet. Buy the best you can afford, and you know, get the kind of stuff that you know is sold in a pet store. And if you buy it online, great, but do your research, because you really don't want to buy that cheap stuff that are in the mega stores that you know, they're just selling for $19 a bag. It's just not good for your pet. So, but those are the kind of things I recommend at a high level. But this episode today, this show, is really about the risks of feeding high-protein diets. And please don't fall for the hype. That's really the message. I mentioned before the break that this concept about high-protein diets, although they sound interesting, that they actually can lead to the development of cancer symptoms in the gut. And by the way, colon cancer is a very common part of the digestive tract that gets, you know, inflicted by cancer. So you really don't want to be providing or inflicting on your dog an environment that could foster the creation of cancer cells. It's really bad stuff. Essentially, it's not just me that you should be thinking of here. There have been all kinds of published studies. In particular, there's the International Journal of Molecular Sciences as long ago as this one here was 2013. There's a great article about carcinogenic substances in the colon with dogs. Also, I'm looking at Department of Agriculture, Food and Nutritional Science with the University of Alberta up there in Canada. And they have some published white papers here about what happens in the gut, the microbial fermentation of dietary protein and the risks about how that contributes significantly to cancer. Another white paper from this one's University of Dundee, Ireland. And this one here is showing protein degradation in the large intestine and the relevance to colorectal cancer. And there's more. There's loads more on these white papers I'm looking at. There's even interesting studies out there that have been published about how fiber helps minimize and actually is useful. So foods that promote more fiber in the gut, fiber in the diet, actually can help lower fecal concentrations of ammonia in the gut. And that's been published in a few different studies. So I think it's interesting that there are different approaches to nutrition, but the key point is all the leading science agrees. Excess protein is dangerous. So, what else is wrong with this? And why else would you be worried? Well, I think the fact that you have this natural process that happens in the body is something that is scary. But you should know that if your dog has any kind of a health condition, it's even worse for them. You can't see it, but it's happening. If your dog is over 7 years of age, it could be a problem. Any dog with kidney disease or anything like that, you're really asking for trouble. But I get it. You may not see this. Your dog seems to poop okay. And oh, by the way, they like the taste of it. So you think, okay, that's fine. But let me tell you what the canary in the mine is. You may not have thought about this before, but if your dog goes out in the yard to do his business or her business, and you see those yellow-brown spots on the grass, you ever wonder what causes those yellow burn spots, why your grass turns yellow and brown? Well, believe it or not, it's most often from, guess what? Feeding high-protein diets. Because I mentioned to you about that ammonia, right? So when your dog's body uses the excess protein, and it can't utilize it, rather, it works to excrete it. The kidneys convert it into, break it down, gets into the urine. When your dog goes and pees in the yard, guess what? Those high levels of ammonia that are now in the dog's urine, which, by the way, those toxins are residing in that whole digestive system, but they do urinate out some of that stuff, and those high concentrations of nitrogen-containing compounds are passed out through the urine, and it burns the lawn. So imagine if it's burning grass. Imagine what that's doing to your dog's body. So you don't see it, folks, but it is pretty dangerous. So, okay, Rick, you just told me that too much protein is not good. So what do you mean? If it's not about quantity of protein, what is it? Well, it's about quality, of course. You have to think about this and say, okay, I'm going to eat the very best quality I can and try to be healthy. Do the best you can. So for your pet, you really want to take your time. Do some research. Read up about these pet food companies you're looking at. And what do they say? What do they talk about? Because you can't possibly understand and get through all the marketing gobbledygook that they say. But if you go to their website and read what they're talking about, if they talk about high protein or they talk about low glycemic or they try to slam other companies for whatever, this, that, and the other, what are they hiding? Okay. So when you evaluate a pet food, you should be looking at, are they talking about the types of quality protein that they're using? Are they talking about fiber in the importance of what that does in the digestive tract to help minimize issues? You should also know that if you're ever considering feeding your dog food and cooking for your pet, your dog cannot live on meat or fish alone. You can't just give them a steak or a hamburger and say, oh, he's fine, I chopped up the leftover chicken we had. That's not enough. You may not know this, but there are over 40 essential nutrients that a dog or cat need. They require them to stay alive. So if you don't feed your dog or cat, that is, a kibble diet that's designed to have all those 40 essential nutrients, you're going to be depriving your pet of the nutrients they need. And by the way, some of those nutrients are really important to stay healthy. So if you think about it this way, every bite of kibble that your pet eats, it's perfectly balanced. And a kibble is kind of like a marvel of modern science because they blend the way it's made, the way we produce it. It has those over 40 essential nutrients, and your dog can stay alive and thrive. And essentially, your body, the dog's body or the cat's body, breaks it down and they process it. It's got the proper levels of nutrition, and they get what they need from eating that. So don't think that feeding kibble is boring or it doesn't, you know, give the dog or cat what they need. It is the best way to feed your pet. I'm not trying to scare you off of pet food in general. I'm just trying to say avoid pet foods that market themselves as high protein. So look for foods that their crude protein level for dogs is below 30%, and for cats, below 35%. That's all you need to know. As long as you're doing that, all those other foods that are, they talk about, these, you know, 40% protein, 30%, it's crazy. Just move on. So if you ever wondered, by the way, about nutrition, I think that it's an interesting question or interesting topic, because kibble doesn't look very exciting, right? You think, okay, why would my dog want to eat that every day? It looks boring. It doesn't seem like they're going to want it as much as, you know, some of this other stuff I see out there. Well, you need to remember that dogs and cats eat for their caloric need, okay? And of course, they'll take junk food because it tastes good, right? But, you know, they should be eating the same diet every day, because consistency is really important with dogs and cats too, by the way. But nutritionists who develop these formulas, they make a recipe. They're following a specific recipe using this group of ingredients, and they have all kinds of, you know, tables and things that help them understand the ratios of different ingredients. So pet food has to have protein, fat, fiber, carbohydrates for energy, and of course vitamins and minerals, so it's complete and balanced. And what a nutritionist does is they get the right ratio of all those ingredients in their recipe. And of course, you get some protein from meat or fish, but you also can get protein, and it's good to do this, from plant-based ingredients. So for example, you can have a formula that's made with chicken or duck or turkey, and you would add, the nutritionist would add to it some kind of a plant component. It could be peas, it could be sweet potatoes, it could be quinoa, chickpeas, whatever it might be. Something that has multiple benefits, because those ingredients I just mentioned, they provide fiber, they provide amino acids, they provide protein. And so an ingredient like that is doing lots of things in addition to just saying, well, I have to put this in, so it's a fiber source. Well, that's not the case. It's actually contributing more to that diet than just a carb source or something. But this whole blend, this combination, right? That's what you're seeing in pet food. And when you read a pet food label, don't worry that you see, you know, plant ingredients in there, or vegetables, I should say, because, you know, provided that they're in the right ratios and formulated correctly, they're going to give the animal the variety of nutrients they need from all different sources. So yes, meat and fish are important, but protein can come from vegetables and plants, and that's actually very healthy. So we are going to just pause for a moment. We'll be back with this word, and then we'll wrap up the show.
One in three adults has prediabetes. That means it could be you, your best man, your worst man. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org to know where you stand. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the Rick Rockhill Radio Show, and I am very happy to be here with you. And we're talking about pet food today. And I just got on my diatribe about high protein diets, and golly, I just man, those drive me bananas. So I'm glad that we've spent the time that we had here to talk about that. But I've been also giving you some advice about kibble and why I think kibble is the way to go. Please don't fall for those raw food diets and those home-prepared fresh diets. Honestly, they're not safe. They're really unhealthy in some ways. And I think that you don't want to take the risk. If you knew what's happening with those raw food diets, you'd be shocked. There are all kinds of concerns out there about safety and risks with raw diets. So I just don't think it's a good way to go. Essentially, when you're feeding your pet a kibbles diet, you get the benefit of the nutrition. You have the benefit of convenience, the benefit of good digestion and safety and all that good stuff. So kibble food, of course, you know, it's readily available. It lasts a long time. It's budget friendly and so forth. But I think you just need to know the basics, and that is read up about the company. Go to their website, see what they're saying. Now, I want to spend a couple more minutes here while we have some time on this show and share with you some opinions I have also about grain-free pet food. So a lot of talk about grain-free because, first of all, people kind of demonized grains years ago, and they said, okay, well, corn, wheat, and soy are bad, so God forbid you feed those to your pet. We'll give them something else. Okay, you know, that's fine. Grain-free foods are fine. And I think there's no problem with grain-free foods. I feed my dogs a grain-free diet. But it doesn't mean that all grains are bad, and I especially would like to talk about carbohydrates for a minute. Because carbohydrates are very important to your dog and your cat. Your cat and dog are perfectly able to digest carbohydrates. Carbs provide energy. So please don't misunderstand that and think that, dogs were never meant to eat a carbohydrate. Carbs are essential because they give the energy for the body and the brain. Dogs and cats do digest them a little differently, but they convert them into energy very efficiently. It is much more difficult for your dog or your cat to get energy just from eating meat and fish. It takes the body longer. It's more work for the body. And so these foods that are zero carbs, they're actually harder for your pet to digest and get the energy they need. It can cause digestive issues. But what's key is the type of carbohydrates, right? So you can have a grain-free diet with carbohydrates, but they're complex carbs, right? And if it's a complex carb and it digests slowly and you blend that with the protein in the diet and the fats and the fibers, that's what can really help and be healthy for your pet. So I would just say don't be afraid of grain-free diets. Just look for foods that talk about the quality and go for the best quality you can find out there. I am very proud to be a partner here at Lucy Pet Foods, and our foods are available. You can find them online and so forth. I'm not just trying to plug them here on this show, but I say that because I'm proud of what we've developed, and that's truth and transparency and honesty. Everything we have is based in science. So check us out at lucypetproducts.com. You can find us on Amazon and Chewy, our own website, lucypetfood.com. And look at our dog and cat foods. You will see the quality and the difference that I've been talking about. I'm Rick Rockhill. Thank you so much for listening and tuning in today. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to send me a message on Twitter at Rick Rockhill, or just shoot me a note right here at the show at Blog Talk Radio. This is the Rick Rockhill Radio Show, and you've been listening right here about dog food, cat food, and high-protein diets causing cancer. Don't put your pet at risk. See you next time.